Malchus, Malchus Edom. But the Eben Ezra, he doesn't quote the Medrash, but the truth of the matter is there is a Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer. Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer is an early Medrash. And Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer actually says, connected all the other statements in Chazal, that the last exile that the Jewish people will undergo before the coming of Mashiach will be the exile of Yishmael. And Yishmael, in fact, the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer says, is the most difficult of all the exiles, because Yishmael is the only nation other than the Jewish people that has Hashem's name in their name, Yisrael, which is the name that Yaakov got when he was victorious over the angel. You have ascended, you have succeeded with God, and Yishmael, God will listen to you. And what that means spiritually is, that's right, what that means spiritually is that Yishmael has, in some unusual way, spiritual zechuyos. Right? People point out, you know, as evil as much of what Islamic fundamentalism is, and of course it is a very evil and violent, but, you know, they do pray to God, they do have tznius, so to speak. So there are certain zechuyos, there are certain spirit. They have mesiris nefesh. Again, it's great. It is crazy to say, and don't stone me because of it. Suicide bombers, who are doing the biggest of avers, rotzchim, you know, murderers, are moser nefesh for their cause. And indeed, Bali Musser have said that we sometimes have to learn mesiris nefesh from Rishayim. That the Russia that is meister nefesh for his rishus, so we have to learn that we have to be willing to be meister nefesh for kedusha. You know, let's take the Nazis for example. The Nazis were not meister nefesh for their cause. It's interesting. The Nazis were cowards. That when a Nazi's life was threatened by something, all of a sudden he became a nice guy. You know, he'd give the kind. You know, when the American army is coming close, you know, these Nazis started giving the Jews food and saying, some of them saying, remember, I gave you some food. Remember, I gave you some food. A day before, he was whipping him and shooting him and killing children. So the Nazis were actually cowards. When they if it came to their life being endangered, they just forgot about their ideology. These terrorists, you know, have an ideology, so to speak. So in some perverse way, it's hard for us to understand, because it is hard. I don't have a good terrorist either. Why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu listen to the prayer of a Russia? It's a hard question. But there is a concept in Ruchnius that when you turn to Hashem, belev shalem, no matter what you're asking for, there is a certain power in doing that. So that's why Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer says that Yishmael is the most dangerous enemy of all. Because Yishmael... Yeah, as we said, the Nazis destroy the body, but Yishmael has a certain spiritual power. Ultimately, Ruchnius is ultimately going to win over materialism. But Yishmael comes with a spiritual power.
Yeah. Nazis is Amalek. Yishmael is...
I understand.
Amalek is supposed to be the worst.
Well, Amalek might be the worst. I mean, see, you're raising two different questions. If you're asking me, you know, which is worse, you know, Amalek is worse. But which is more dangerous to us, which can have more of a power over us, it would actually be Yishmael. Yishmael is a more dangerous enemy in that sense. Now, and so indeed, we are, you know, if you look at the world now, you know, granted, are we in Golus Yishmael now? In the Eben Ezra's time, literally, most of the Jews in the world were ruled in Islamic countries. In that sense, we can't say we're in the Golos of Yishmael. There aren't that many Jews anymore. There are some, but there aren't that many Jews that are in Arab countries. There are some, but not that many. But nevertheless, the idea of being in the Golos of a nation doesn't mean you have to be living in their country. If you think about the grip that Arabs have, or Islam has, over the whole world, it's not such a stretch to say we are still in the Golos of Yishmael. So the question is, this question I want to raise, again, this is all a long hakdama to the Rashi I'm going to share with you. The question I want to raise is, so is the Eben Ezra and Chazal reconcilable? Meaning, are these two different cheshbonos, where Chazal say the last Golos is the Golos of Edom, Ibn Ezra says the last galus is the galus of Yishmael. Now you understand, from a literal messianic perspective, each was hoping, in other words, in the time of Chazal, right, that's pre-Islam, the galus was Edom, Rome. So they were batuach, Mashiach would come, in this galus. By the Ibn Ezra's time, the dominant galus was Yishmael. He was batuach, right? But the emphasis is, both have passed, right? So what do we look at as the last galus? So the answer is, both are right. This is really an example of Elu v'Elu divrei Elokim chayim. Why is that so? Because if you think about it spiritually, there are two types of dangers Klal Yisrael faces. Esav represents unbridled materialism. Because if you go back to Esav, right, what does Esav say when Yaakov wants to buy the Bechaira from Esav? The Bechaira. So Bechaira is the right to do the divine service. So Esav utters really the immortal words. These are words that really tell us where he's coming from. Hine anochi holech mamus. Behold, I am going to die. Lama zeli b'chayra. Why do I need the firstbornship? Now, this doesn't just mean he's hungry. What he's saying is, there is no life beyond the physical. What is this idea of serving Hashem because ultimately you're connected with Hashem for eternity? Esav denies this. Esav says, life is about pleasure. Life is about enjoyment. Life is about hedonism. Life is about materialism. So Esav does represent the notion of materialism, hedonism, pleasure seeking. And even though you might say, well, gee, that's a little schwer, because on one end we said the Galus of Edom represents Christianity, which is religion. There's a little bit of an inconsistency, but nevertheless, we could say that much of Christian history, certainly during the Middle Ages and maybe today as well, was actually very much preoccupied with much more materialistic issues than spiritual issues, dominating countries, conquering countries, and the like. Now, the other, and look at the Vatican is one of the richest institutions in the entire world, in terms of the gold, the silver. Who knows what they have in our base on Mikdash? Oh, no. I read a recent article that's exaggerated. They probably don't have anything. The Romans probably melted everything. In other words, it's not like the menorah is sitting around. But Islam represents a different sakana. Islam represents... So what I'm saying is, the galus of Edom is not just a galus outside of us. It's a galus inside of us, meaning it's the galus in which we're meshukah in hedonism and secularism and pleasure. It's not just an outside galus. We face the danger of galus Edom within us. Now, Yishmael might be a different thing. Yishmael, how to say this properly, Yishmael represents the use of ruchnius in perverted and improper ways. Right? Yishmael uses God. It's connected to God. Prayer, tznius, ritual, mitzvos of some sort. But it takes the kochos of ruchnius, in other words, takes the kochos of ruchnius in the world, and it uses them in hateful, negative, and destructive ways. And that too is a nisayon that we face in our lives when we have sinas chinam, a lack of avas Yisrael, when we use even our ruchnius to kind of look down and disparage and be mevatel. Right, that's an aspect. So when we say that we're in the two galuses of Yishmael and Edom, it is also connected to spiritual chesronos within us that we have to be mesaken. As Chazal said, the second Mikdash was destroyed because of sinas chinam, and it cannot be rebuilt until we transcend sinas chinam and we create achdus and avas Yisrael. Okay, so this was kind of a bit of a lengthy introduction regarding the Musag, the concept of the four exiles and the stages that we have to go through. So here is what Rashi says. Rashi says, again, going back to Agur bin Yaqeh, we actually have five enumerations of listings of four. Okay, five enumerations of listings of four. And Rashi says that Ogur bin remember, Ogur bin Yakel lives from the time of Shlomo HaMelech, or even before, so this is obviously prophetic, because even the first Galus hasn't happened yet. But he is communicating Nevuos about the four Galiuses. And why does he do so five times? Because Klal Yisrael were Nischayev, the Galus, because they violated the Chamisha Chumshei Torah. Since they violated the five books of the Torah, we need to go through the four Galiuses, right? So that's going to explain, Rashi says, why the four Galiuses are reiterated in different images. We'll see what the images are in a minute. Five times, Avru Yisrael al Chamisha Chumshei Torah. Okay, so that's how Rashi, that's how the Medrash understands the structure.
Yeah. Is that just a symbolism of five? The five, or is it actually the mitzvahs within each sefer? Sefer Bereishis is not so many mitzvahs.
It's very, very hard to say. But on the other hand, there is a remez here, because the Mitzif says like this. The Mitzif says, I mentioned Friday night, that what is the name? Chazal give a name to Chumash Bereishis, besides Chumash Bereishis. They call it Sefer HaYashor, the book of uprightness, because it is the book of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, who are called Yesharim Lamakai. So the Nitziv has a very, so this is one of those hakdamas everyone should look at, it's short. The Nitziv has a hakdama that what is the meaning of a Yashor? And he says a Yashor is primarily in the midos of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. So he says, Bereishis does not have many mitzvahs. Bereishis only has three mitzvahs, right? It has the mitzvah of Bris Milah, which actually is repeated in the Torah anyway, and the mitzvah of Gid Hanasha, not eating the sciatic nerve. That's why you can't get a good sirloin steak, although in Israel you actually can, because the problem with the Gid Hanasha is that to remove the nerves in the hindquarters is very hard and very tedious. So in America, the minhag basically is that the whole back half of an animal is just sold to goyim, because to remove the gid hanasha is too difficult. So meat court cuts like sirloin steak, which are from the back half of the animal, rear half of the animal, you can't get kosher. But in Eretz Yisrael, where there's less meat, they actually go to the trouble of being menakir. So you can actually get, although the meat as a whole is not as good here anyway, but the point is you can get different things that you can't get in America. But okay, anyway. But there's Gid Hanasha, there's Bris Milah, and there's Pru Urvu. But the Nitziv says, the Tachlis of Sefer Bereishis is to teach us Midos and Hanhagos. Now it makes a lot of sense that we're connecting Bereishis as a reason of Galus because of Sinas Chinam and everything else. And of course, we look at Sefer Bereishis and we see how devastating Sinas Chinam is. Whether it was the killing of, Cain kills Hevel, Bechiras Yosef, right, all of these in Yonim. So yes, when we say you're over on Chumash Bereishis, we mean you did not learn the lessons that Hashem is giving you in Chumash Bereishis. Right, so this is how Rashi learns, because we were over the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, we were in Nischai. By the way, let me tell you another thing that is a bit upsetting. The Chidushi Harim brings from Svarim that had we completed, Hashem told Abraham we were going to be slaves for 400 years. Now we know we were only in Mitzrayim 210 years, and a lot of those years we weren't even slaves. You know, Yaakov's life and Yosef and the Shvatim. So Hashem took us out 190 years early. Why was that so? Because, as we know, as the Arizal says, we were on the 49th level of Tuma. Had we stayed another minute, even the amount of time it takes for our dough to rise, we would have hit level number 50, we would have been irredeemable. So Hashem took us out 190 years earlier. Great, great chesed. But this is what the Chiddush Yerim says. Had we been able to complete the 400 years of exile in Mitzrayim, that would have eliminated the need for any of the other exiles. We would have been perfected. We wouldn't have sinned. The Beis HaMikdash would never have been destroyed. We would have entered Eretz Yisrael I'm not sure if it's with Moshe or without Moshe, but Mashiach would have come. That would have been the Geula. That would have been it. Because we couldn't hold out another 190 years, we need all the Gullus that we have now. The analogy would be chemotherapy. It's unfortunately a very exact analogy. Let's say a person has a cancer in his body, Rahman al-Islam, and a person undergoes chemotherapy. Now, sometimes you have to stop chemotherapy because the medicine is so potent that the chemotherapy itself can kill the patient. So you have to stop it. If you go on, the patient's going to die. But because you had to stop it early, there's a little bit of cancer that's left in the system. And that cancer grows and grows, and then later, you're going to have more radical treatment to be able to deal with it. That's exactly the scenario. We needed 400 years to get the cancer out of our system. But we couldn't have survived that 400 years. We would have died spiritually. So the therapy had to be truncated, had to be shortened. But because of that, there was the cancer in us that necessitated the thousands of years of Gullus. So really, it's a bit of a sad thought. The thousands of years of Gullus that we have is because we couldn't take another 190 years in Mitzrayim. Had we been able to take that 190 years, that would have been the end of it. Okay.
What is the cancer? The Midos Rosh?
Midos Rosh, so whatever it is exactly, whatever the spiritual pagamin. Right? The Torah itself describes Mitzrayim as a purification pot. Mitzrayim is described in the Torah as Kor HaBarzel. Kor HaBarzel is an iron furnace. What is a furnace? We're not talking about like a little space heater. A furnace is when you have metal that you've extracted from the ground, and the metal is mixed with all sorts of elements, with dirt and with rock and with other types of metals that you don't want. So you need to smelt it. You need to burn it away so that the impurities get separated and the like, right? So Mitzrayim was said to be a smelting pot. Not a melting pot, a smelting pot, where you smelt the metal, right, to separate the impurities. That's what it was designed to do. But once again, the problem with these treatments is that sometimes they're so powerful that they can kill the patient in different ways. They had to be stopped.
They were holding on 39th level of tumor.
49th
level of tumor.
Yep.
And they did not engage in intermarriage. Nowadays, yep. About 70% of it.
Well, that's a very good. That's a very good question. We like to say kind of casually, oh, they were so bad. They're the 49th level of tumor. Well, let's check it here. They kept their Jewish names. They spoke Lashon HaKodesh. They wore, uniquely Jewish clothing. They didn't intermarry, according to another medrash, and they didn't speak Lashon Hara. That's what we mean by the 49th level of purity. Okay, so we're the big tzaddikim. No, we're not like them. Let's compare, our Jewish world with the people who are the 49th level of tuma, and let's try to say, well, what madrigal are we on? Well, 49 and a half, whatever it is. Well, The thing is, presumably we're not at level number 50, because otherwise we would be gone. But, we might be in a difficult situation. Although the good news there is, I think Rav Chaim Volozhiner says, that after Matan Torah, a Jew cannot sink to the level of 50, meaning to say, Torah, but it's before the Torah, if you can't swim, you drown, basically. In other words, if you sank to a low enough level, that was it. But Torah is like a lifeline that exists in the world, that it's always there to help a Jew. So no matter how bad a Jew becomes through the koach of being connected to the Torah, he will never hit the 50th level. So even if we're 49 and a half and all sorts of, low levels, we will never hit a point. A Jew cannot hit a point where it's not possible for him to return. Now, that doesn't mean every Jew will return right now. Unfortunately, because of free will, people can make choices. But it means potentially. See, the 50th level is a different level. That's where you couldn't return, even if you wanted to. It was impossible. Through Torah, it never becomes impossible. It always becomes something else.
You mentioned that if we would have injured for 400 years, there would have never been any fortalices.
Yeah.
says that if all, it also says if we had done this, the facilitate of the eagle, and there's other time that we did in 40 years, we would have also buried the gula.
Yep.
So there, you see, we would have needed 400 years.
That's true. Yeah, that's a very good point. In other words, it's two things, meaning to say Hashem gave us a second chance even after that, meaning even though, that's exactly right, even though when we left Mitzrayim, we still had these spiritual imperfections, and to eradicate them, we would have needed these thousands of years of Gullus, the four Gulliuses, but at Matan Torah, Hashem gave us a cleansing that brought us back to the Madrega of Adin Rishon before the Chet. And that taka would have been sufficient as well. We lost that chance too. So you're right. That maybe instead of bemoaning that we should have held out for 190 years, Hashem gave us an easier option, so to speak. Don't sin with the golden calf and, you're okay. Matan Torah itself gave us that eternity. That's a good point. Okay, so now let me just take it relatively quickly through how Rashi deals with the five groupings of the four kingdoms, and I will actually show you, I don't know if you have the Rashi in front of you, but I will actually show you something that's an example of censorship even within Rashi. It's this funny thing that there's something in Rashi that clearly is from the censor. Okay, the first group, right, which is Pasuk Tesvov, says there are three things that are never satisfied, and four never say enough. And the enumeration is the following. This is in verse 16, Perek Lamed, verse Tesayin. Let me just be sure I have the right here. 1 second. Yeah. Sha'al, okay, this is the first. Sha'al is the grave. Now, literally what it's saying is, hey, so many people die, and the graves are never satisfied, right? The grave keeps on asking for more, meaning people keep dying. That's actually a problem. We're going to run out of space for cemeteries. It's amazing, but until that point. So, Sha'al, the graves are never happy. Otser Rechem, the withholding of the womb, meaning infertility. So many people want to have children, and that is withheld from them. I'll list them first. And the third one is the earth never gets enough water, no matter how many times you water a field. You have to water it constantly. And the last is fire. Fire burns and destroys, and it's never happened, meaning the fire keeps on destroying. Right? So these are the four things that no matter how much they take, they're never taken up. So Rashi says the following. Rashi says, Sha'al, the grave, is a remez to Malchus Bavel, because Nebuchadnezzar is described by other Nevi'im as Hirchiv Kisha'al Nafshai. He expanded his soul like a grave, meaning so many people he killed, etc. Right? And of course he buried the Beis HaMikdash. Oitzer Rechem. Now, Oitzer Rechem is a bit of a pun. Oitzer Rechem means the closing of a womb, infertility. But Rechem also means Rachamim. Oitzer Rechem could be translated the withholding of mercy. This refers to the Gullus of Persia, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kaviyachal seems to have withheld his mercy from even the physical survival of Am Yisrael, by giving Haman the apparent authority to kill Am Yisrael. Okay, Mahashmin. The land is not satisfied with water. This refers to Yavon, because again, Rashi doesn't say why, but I would suggest this. Water is normally a reference to Torah. And Yavon, you understand this. Yavon more than Bavel and Paras. Bavel and Paras did not try to take the Jewish people away from their religion. Nebuchadnezzar didn't care about religion one way or the other. In other words, Nebuchadnezzar wanted to conquer and destroy, and Persia wanted to physically destroy. In other words, Haman was like Hitler. Haman did not care if you were religious or not religious. Okay? The first of the Goliaths that was other than now, Moloch was in the desert, but the first of the four Goliaths that was specifically designed to be Iker Klal Yisrael from the Torah was Yavon. And that's why by Yavon we say, compare the Alanisim, right? Compare the Alanisim for Hanukkah and Purim, and you see this very, very clearly. In the Alanisim for Purim, we talk about an enemy that tried to lahashmig, la'arog, la'aved, he wanted to destroy us. In the Alanisim for Hanukkah, la'ashgicham torasecha, to make them forget your Torah. So that's what it means. It's a land that is not satisfied with water. It rejects the, instead of learning, no matter how much water you give it, it wants more, which is a pashut pshat, this drasha is saying it rejects the water. It doesn't want the water. Yavan wants to drive us away from the Torah. And Eish is Esav. Because Eish, now again, you could say the Holocaust, right? It burned, actually burned Jews in fire. But Eish is destructive, and that's a remez that the destruction will be most powerful in the Golus of Esav, as indeed, whether it's the Crusades, the pogroms, or the Holocaust. So that first listing, therefore, the grave, the withholding of mercy, the not being satisfied with water, and the destruction of fire, Rashi says that's merumas to the four exiles. Now then we have another list. Right, if you go down to the next listing. The reason for that would be that because the exile of Edom is much, much longer, it indicates that it's keneged kula, meaning say it's longer than all the other three put together. And that would be, according to Rashi, it actually makes sense. Although, as I say, one of them I don't really have an answer. I didn't see an answer anywhere. Why in one of them we're going to see just straight four as opposed to a three and a four. Now, the next one is another list of four, no, a three and a four. And it says the following. This is Pasuk Yud Ches. Three things are wondrous in my eyes, meaning I don't understand them, and there's a fourth that I don't know at all. And it mentions the following. The path of an eagle in heaven, the path of a snake over a rock, the path of a ship in the ocean, and the path of a man with a woman. Now, let me first explain, what would this pasuk mean in a very literal way before we get into drash? What Agur is suggesting on pshat, and Rashi actually says this pasuk pshat as well, is that there are certain things, once they are done, there seems to be no trace that they ever happened at all. So, for example, when an animal or a person walks in a field, there will be a trace of their action because there'll be footprints or something. But certain things don't leave a mark. When a bird flies in the sky, once the bird is gone, you don't really know where it flew. There's nothing, there's no permanent marker in the air. Similarly, when a snake slithers over a rock, like you don't know where the snake is. When a ship goes through the water, right? Once it's gone, you don't really know where it was. And the fourth is when a man has relations with an Arab that he shouldn't have relations with. There is no mark. In other words, actually the marshal goes on and says, so is the way of promiscuous people. They just wipe themselves afterwards and say, I did nothing wrong. In other words, the mussar here is that people think they can hide their averos, just like they can hide the eagle's path and the snake's path and the like, but that's a mistake because I could have sparkled it. Right? That's the simple meaning of the puzzle. By the way, there's a very, very interesting grammatical point here that's relevant on Jewish-Christian debate. That is the following. Obviously, the last of these four is called Derech Geber Bialma, the way of a man with a woman, which means after intercourse, there's no, unless you got pregnant, there's no way that anybody could tell. Now, l'chaira, here's the problem. If she was a virgin, then of course you can tell because the basulim were torn. So it must mean that Alma does not mean a virgin. Alma just means a woman who's not a virgin. Now, why is that important? Because in the Navi Yeshayahu, when there's a prophecy made to Chizkiyahu, that behold, the Alma will conceive, that's what the word Alma, so the King James translation of Alma is, behold, the virgin will conceive. And they say, oh, this is a favor. If you ever met a Christian missionary, a Jew or a Christian, they will always bring this up to you. Behold, Isaiah says, the virgin will conceive. And the answer is, it doesn't say the virgin. The word for virgin is basula. It says Alma. And Alma is a young woman, and it's not referring to a virgin birth. It's referring to Chizkiyahu HaMelech is going to be born, a righteous king. Now, the point is, I really just started this today, really. I've heard many times that the refutation to that is, Alma does not mean virgin. But here, Lani Astaiti, you actually have a 100% raya that Alma does not mean virgin, because the whole pasuk is saying, Derech Gever the Alma is not recognizable. If she was a virgin, it would certainly be recognizable. And the whole point of the pasuk is saying, nobody can tell. And then the Musriz, Hashem knows. Okay? So this is mamash, a good raya, that Alma is not a virgin. In fact, this is better than what I hear. I hear people say, well, Alma just means a young woman, whether it's a virgin or not. I would go further. I think this pasuk is mofiach, that it specifically is a term for a woman that's already had intercourse, that she's not a virgin. Because otherwise it wouldn't be true. It wouldn't be comparable to the Nesher B'Shamayim and the Nochash Alitzor. Okay, now, so the simple meaning of the pasuk again is that people make a mistake in their lives. People think, oh, just like the eagle covers its tracks, and the boat covers its tracks, and the snake covers its tracks, so too I can sin and nobody's going to know about it. But the big mistake is somebody is always going to know about it. And that is, of course, the Ribono Shel Olam. Okay, that's the Pashat Pshat, which Rashi actually says first. But going back to the long Rashi, Rashi says the following. The eagle is Nebuchadnezzar. He doesn't really explain all this, but the eagle is Nebuchadnezzar. The snake is Persia. The ship of the water is Yavan. Perhaps that's so, because Yavan, I'm trying to think, that's correct. Yavan was the first of the exiles that needed to reach Eretz Yisrael by sea. If you look at a map, Persia and Babel reach Eretz Yisrael by a land route. Now, why one is an eagle and one is a snake, Rashi doesn't really help us here. I don't have a full explanation of the Medrash. But why Yavan is a ship actually makes sense, because they're the first ones that came here via boat.
So an eagle would also make sense.
Huh?
An eagle could also go overseas.
An eagle could make sense as well, yeah, that's true. But the reason Nebuchadnezzar is called an eagle is not because he flew, because he didn't fly to Eretz Israel, but he's called an eagle because of all of the four Malchios, he was considered to be, although not as destructive as Rome, but he was the most powerful. Nebuchadnezzar was considered to be the highest on that level. That's why in Daniel's prophecies, Nebuchadnezzar is gold. Remember I mentioned that gold, that statue? Nebuchadnezzar is gold, and Persia is silver, and Greece is copper, and Rome is iron and pottery. So Nesher is a symbol of elevation and status.
I heard that Nesher is just like Nesher.
Oh, Nebuchadnezzar's own name could be eagle?
Yeah.
That's interesting. In fact, that is, I believe that may have been the Babylonian royal symbol. I remember seeing pictures that way and the like. Now, Derech Gever Bialma, the way of a man with a woman, that refers to Edom. So that's a very interesting idea. Why is that so? Because Derech Gever Bialma means that Edom tries to entice us not only with persecution, but also with assimilation, meaning it comes across as saying, marry with us, intermarry, interbreed, which is a remez, in other words, that one of the nisyanais of Galus Edom is going to be intermarriage. And of course, that absolutely is the case. In the United States, one out of two marriages of a Jew are to a non-Jewish partner. And I'll tell you the truth, I'm not sure if they say that one out of two is to a Jewish partner, I'm not sure if that's going to be true either with all of the gayruses, all the fake gayruses that are around. So it's not counting that. So it could be higher. And in smaller towns, intermarriage is as high as 7 out of 10, 70%. Tremendous korban of intermarriage. So that's a remez of Derech Geber Bialma. Okay. Now,
from that
pasuk itself
comes the
raya getem. That's right. That's right. The pasuk about them is about them. Yeah.
Intermarriage has only been a recent
trial. Okay, that's fine. And it's for character. I think there's that's gufa amayla. That shows you the mile of kisvei hakodesh, that these are nevuas that mention things that may not occur for hundreds and hundreds, thousands of years after the Nevuah, but it's Marames, there's going to be that Nisoyan in Golos, in Golos Edom. Right? That's for Keret, that's a strengthening of the Nevuah. Okay, now we then come to our, yes. And this idea too, remember it goes on and says, so is the way of a woman who's Mizana, she wipes herself and says, I've committed nothing wrong. So Rashi's Marames, that's already referring to the Jewish people, because remember, the Geber is Rome, and the woman is the Jewish people, and the remez here is that one of the nisyanos, one of the trials in Golos Edom, is that a Jew will not even think they're doing anything wrong. See, there are different madregas here. There's a madrega when a person sins and does all sorts of bad things, but they know they're sinning. And then there's a madrega where you don't even think you're doing anything wrong. You can't even do tshuva because you don't know there's anything wrong. So Rashi's being merames, not Rashi, I mean this medrash is being merames, that one of the aspects of Golos Edom is that the Jewish people will not have an awareness that there's anything wrong. I mean, think about this in so many areas. Gay marriage, you know, for example. Now, there is a medrash that says Sodom was not, you know, according to, there are different reasons. What exactly was the reason that Sodom was destroyed? The Navi Yechezkel indicates Sodom was destroyed because of cruelty and selfishness. You know, it's the lack of hospitality to the poor. That's what the Navi says. And yet, Chazal also have a Masorah that Sodom was destroyed because of sodomy, because of Mishkav Zohar, homosexuality, as we see from Lot. They wanted to. So there's a medrash that says on that Sodom was not destroyed for Mishkav Zohar until they started making a kesuvah for it. Meaning, when they were just sinning, but they knew it was an Aveira, but when they elevate it to something that's good and right, and they even make a ceremony, not only are they not ashamed, but it becomes the right thing to do. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu cannot be saved. There's a certain erech apayim for a chayte. When a chayte knows he's doing the wrong thing, that you don't have when a people change the standard. Now, the emphasis is this is exactly what is happening on that particular, I don't want to be marach on that particular issue, but, you know, there have always been homosexuals in the world. I mean, you know, you go back. I mean, that's why the Torah answers it. The Torah doesn't have to answer something that nobody at all does. So, obviously, there were homosexuals and the like, okay? But today, we have this inyan where it becomes legitimated, it becomes celebrated. There are, Rachman Aslan, rabbis, perform marriage ceremonies with Sheva Brachas, you know, for these things. You know, very bad things. So, in the United States, gay marriage is you know, it's beginning to be legalized in different states, and you know, there's kind of no doubt that that is the direction of American society going that way. Even here in Yerushalayim, there were parades. So, this is one example, but there are many other examples. This is one example of the idea that the vice of the woman that's mizana, according to this pasuk, is not merely that she was mizana, but it's her statement Lai pa'aldi aven. I didn't do anything wrong. And Rashi says, once again, that that is a characteristic of Golus Edayim that a person doesn't even admit. You know, the Chazon Ish once said, somebody asked Chazon Ish once that he was sometimes friendly with people who were not even so from, you know, he was a nice person. And yet, the problem they were asking him was that there were like Rabbanim, Talmidei Chachamim, who had, the Chazon Ish was sometimes not talked to because he felt they were not functioning on the Madrega they should be functioning. He said, why do you talk to Jews who are seemingly far below the people that you reject? So the Chazon Ish said the following idea. The Chazon Ish said that in Klal Yisrael, we understand that not everybody's tzaddik. In fact, even the word tzibur, it's fascinating. Tzibur means congregation. It's actually, some want to say it's Rosh Tevos. Tzadikim Beinonim Urishoyim. You ever hear that? Tzibur. Tzadikim Beinonim Urishoyim. That in Klal Yisrael, there are many, many categories. And we can accept and we can interact with many types of Jews, as long as they're makir what the standard is. So a Beinoni or even a Russia, because of Taiva, who knows what it means to be a tzaddik, who knows what Torah is. So, and he respects that, even if he's not living that way. So I can relate to him. But the Chazon Ish felt that some of the Talmidei Chacham they didn't want to talk to had hashgachos in which they defined the good in a way that was different than the Chazon Ish held. In other words, it was a different standard. They were diluting the standard, they were changing the standard, etc. So the Chazon Ish says that's something that you have to be merachet because they're redefining the standard, right? There's a difference between, a person who is makir a standard. In fact, that's why, to a large degree, the conservative reform movement is not very successful in Eretz Yisrael. Now you might say, well, why shouldn't it be successful? Not every Israeli is Haredi for sure, and not every Israeli is Orthodox. So wouldn't you assume that conservative or reform religion would be something that a non-Orthodox Israeli would be attracted to? It's not true. It really doesn't. The reform movement is very, very, very weak in Israel. It's getting weak everywhere, but it's much stronger in America. And the reason is because even a Chilani Israeli understands what Yiddishkeit is. He says, I don't live that way, but I'm not going to go to something fake. I mean, an Israeli will say this. I'll either do the real thing or I won't do it at all. I'm not going to go to fake. Meaning an Israeli is makir emes in some ways, that even though I don't live the MS, I'm not gonna fool myself. And this is what is being said here, that one of the things that we're gonna lose in Golos Edayim is we will adopt the attitude of Lo Pa'alti. Okay. So that's the second one. Yeah. Now let's go to the third one.
When the Goyim are advocating for marrying off homosexuals.
Yeah.
Said that in New York, like within weeks when they wanted to pass this legal between men having been married, Sandy Storm, Sandy,
okay.
He said that there were shuls that were flooded and hundreds of tefillin were flooded.
There was big, let me put it this way, first of all, al pi halacha, let me just emphasize, al pi halacha, homosexual relations is forbidden to non-Jews as well. It is considered to be under the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. It's considered to be Arayas. So it's halachically, there's no difference. Now, whether Jews should protest is a tricky issue. No, it is a tricky issue because these protests usually don't help that much, and if it endangers for Jews to take public profile on a lot of issues outside of Eretz Yisrael, can sometimes backfire into a lot of discrimination. But I think, it depends how you protest. Rallies and demonstrations are garbage. But if you're talking about reasoned presentations to the effect that we are not interested in discriminating against homosexuals, we are not interested in what people do in their private lives, right? We're not interested in bursting into their houses and arresting them, But we feel that the state should be neutral on this. In other words, the Nachmina is, when you legitimate marriage, you're not being neutral anymore. You're actually taking a side and you're saying, this is kosher. And I think you know, religious people can certainly make an argument that even separation of church and state should actually mean that the state should not engage, you know, in legitimating behaviors that are so profoundly offensive to the religious beliefs of society, and it demeans marriage. So it depends what type of demonstration you're talking about. To have a bunch of people yelling like they had to do in Israel, it's a bad thing to do even here, and it makes very little sense in the United States. But I think, you know, people should protest it. And they have. And they, I mean, maybe not enough, but they have. But to very little effect. But I think it's important to be on record that marriage is a holy union, and the definition shouldn't change.
Is lesbian intercourse permitted?
No, it's not. Lesbian intercourse is not as chomer as Mishkav Zachar. That is 100% true. Mishkav Zachar is a chi of Misa, and lesbianism is not a chi of Misa. That's true.
But it's still Asmidei, right?
It's Asmidei, right? So the Rambam says there's a love in it. Yeah. So it's a low sasa, you know. But yeah. Okay.
What's the love?
I think it's a general love. Kamasa Eretz Mitzrayim lo sasa. It's subsumed under a very general statement. So it's not one of the Kareses or one of the Nisas, but it's subsumed under Kamasa Eretz Mitzrayim.
Can we build pyramids?
Didn't hear you.
Can we build pyramids?
Well, okay. Well, obviously that pasuk is referring to we were the ones who built the pyramids. What's the problem? That's what we did. That's going to be okay. Okay. All righty. Let's go to the next one again. Now the next one are three things that makes the earth. This is pasuk chav aleph. Yeah. Three things make the earth tremble, and they a fourth one that's unbearable. And it mentions, these are the four things. When an Eved becomes a king, that's number one. When a disgusting person is satisfied with bread, meaning a person who doesn't have midos seems to have all the prosperity in life. When one who is a hateful person, kitiba literally means when she has intercourse, but it's understood when she marries, when she, you know, when she has a good family life. And when a lowly maidservant takes over the role of her mistress. So again, the Medrash tells us. One second. So here the Medrash says, when the Eved takes over for his master, this refers to Nebuchadnezzar. Now again, this is based on another Chazal. Chazal say that Nebuchadnezzar in his early career was actually a servant to a predecessor called Merodach Baladan, and he was a secretary to Merodach, and he eventually became king through various ways. So Golas Bavel is described as an Eved who becomes a king. A Naval, a disgusting person who satiates himself with goodies, with bread, this is Achashverosh, who, of course, made a mishteh for 180 days. Of course, he had much more than bread, but bread here is understood as physical pleasures, such as food. A hated person, when they have relations, this is Yavan. Now, why is this? Now, you'll notice that the sexual imagery we had before was connected to Esav. Here it's connected to Yavan, but here I would say there is a remiss here. If you learn Ksuvus, or maybe even from the Hanukkah story, you may know this, that one of the gezeiros of the Yavanim, it may have been even pre-Antiochus, was that every virgin, the night that she got married, she had to have intercourse with a Greek officer first. This was, but this was actually done in the Middle Ages in other countries as well. There's a whole French term, how do you pronounce it? Droit, Droit et Signores, or whatever it is.
Jewish people or everybody?
No, in the Middle Ages they said it was for everybody, but this, the Gezeirah of Yavin was on the Jewish people. So there might be a remez here that the hated one has intercourse. It might be a remez to that Gezeirah.
Is Snua
Feminine? Shnua is feminine. That would be a kasha on this. Why would Yavon be in the feminine position if it's a reference to this gezeira? And yeah, that's a good question. I don't have an answer to that. And the shifcha that inherits the master, although that's also feminine, that's referring to Esav, because the blessing that Yaakov gave to, Yitzchak gave to Yaakov is that he would rule over his brother and that Esav would be subordinate to Yaakov. So in a sense, Esav should have been, now again, why we're using feminine is also Akasha, but the Medrash Rashi brings is that Esav is the Shivcha and the mistress is Yaakov, and it is a shocking, disgusting thing when the Shivcha rules over the mistress. Yeah.
What was considered the end of Golus Bavel?
The end of Golus Bavel was the conquest. In other words, it really didn't end. The Golus didn't end. It was just taken over by another kingdom. What happened was, if you remember the famous scene in the book of Daniel, the handwriting on the wall, Belshazzar, who was Nebuchadnezzar's grandson. Like Belshazzar was Vashti's father. Since you know, Ahasuerus married from the Babylonian line. But Belshazzar was having a party with the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash. He was celebrating, as Ahasuerus did later. And in the middle of the party, imagine, such a frightening scene, a huge hand comes in and inscribes words on the wall. And the words were in Hebrew, was Ksav Ashuris, and nobody knew how to read them. And Daniel knew how to read them. And those words, called handwriting on the wall, that's the phrase in English now, when something bad is about to happen, and you'd be given warning, have you seen the handwriting on the wall? It's taken from that. And the words were in Aramaic, but in the Hebrew letters. Mene, mene, tekal ufarsin. Mene, mene, your deeds have been counted twice, over and over again. Tekal, like shekel, they've been weighed. Ufarsin, and the Persians are coming. And Belshazzar, in spite of this, he ignored it. How could you ignore such a thing? It's pretty amazing. He just went to sleep that night. And that very night, his own servants killed him in a relatively bloodless coup, except for his blood. In a relatively bloodless coup, Persia took over the Babylonian Empire. So it didn't end with the building of the Beis Hamikdash. It was only years later that the Persians allowed it. But Babel was truncated with the assassination of Belshazzar.
These are references to the Jews.
Well, you're giving another explanation. I'm just giving this because Rashi says, you can see these psukim are very obscure, obviously, and there are many, many different interpretations. In fact, we haven't gotten to the Gra yet. I'm not sure if we'll get to it tonight, but I just want to go through the psukim. Okay. 1 second. So that gets us Shnua Kizibayel. Shipcha is Esav. Now then we get to two groups, which are animals. We have two grouping of animals. The first group of animals departs from the pattern for some reason. That is, four things are very small, but they are very wise. The first it mentions are ants. Ants are not strong, and yet they have the wisdom to prepare their food in the summer. Shlomo HaMelech was fascinated with ants because, as you know, in other parts of Mishlei, he has a very whole famous discussion about how the ant is a model of industriousness, of foresight, that when food is available, it stores up the food so it's not going to starve in the winter. Right? The famous verse that Puritans love so much, go to the ant, thou sluggard, Lech el namala ha'atzel, etc. So here too, Ogur ben Yoke, is praising the ants, that even though they're so small and tiny and apparently powerless, they know how to prepare in the summer their food for the winter. Seems to be a good thing, but we'll see how Rashi will interpret it. The second one is Shvanim. Shvanim are a type of rabbit or hare. And this is called the rock badger. Now, the rock badger is able to find clefts in rocks. In other words, it actually protects itself by finding holes in rocks, so it's surrounded by rock, so it's in a relatively safe place. It squeezes itself in a rock. So Am lo atzum, it is not mighty. V'yosimu basela beisam, but they make their home in the rock. Meaning they have the brains, so to speak, or the instincts, to find a very strong place, which then can cover up in various ways. Third, melech ein la arba. That's again next week's parsha, after 2 weeks' parsha. There is no king to the locusts, and yet v'yetze chotzeitz kulo, but it goes out like an organized army, right? These are the referring to the swarms of locusts that can decimate a field. And somehow, even though there's no king of the locusts, but they behave in coordinated ways. And they could actually conquer, meaning there is strength in their numbers and in their unity, even though individually a single locust is not so great. Yep.
Like the birds, they also, like, there's, either there's many of them, there's no leader, but
yep.
They also, when they fly, sometimes they do it.
Right, they have a formation, right. Right. But with a bird, yeah, that's true. But with a bird, you don't really see what they're doing. You see they're flying. Here with the locust, we can actually see they zoom down into a field, and there's nothing there in 2 minutes. I just finish up the field. And the last one is Samamis. Now, Samamis is actually in modern Hebrew, too. Samamis means a spider. Right? A spider. Biyadayim titapes. It is so small that you could grab it with your fingers. Of course, if it's a black widow, I wouldn't try that. But you know, I can grab a spider. So it's nothing. And yet, somehow a spider manages to be in the White House, whatever it is. Meaning to say, you know, you can find a spider web anywhere. You know, you could have the richest palace in the world, and there might be a spider web in a corner. So, gee, how does that spider get into all of these good places? I can't go into the White House or whatever it is. So he's saying that... Now again, it's enigmatic. What is he trying to praise the spider for doing exactly? But he praises here four animals. The ant is praised because of its industriousness. The rock badger, this rabbit, is praised because it finds a way to protect itself even though it's a weak animal. The arba, the locust, is praised because it's able to accomplish things with unity. Even though by itself it couldn't do very much. And the spider is praised because it manages to get itself into important places without a reservation. Right? Somehow he manages to get in where I couldn't get in. Right? Okay. So again, you can see there are many, many pshatim here, but again, Rashi takes it down. Just so quickly what Rashi says over here. Rashi says, the ant is a description of Bavel. Again, we're not really told why. This is a bit of a problem. It's not really clear. Rashi says why. Rashi says the reason why is because of the notion of preparing your bread ahead of time. Because it's not so much an ant as it is the characteristic of the ant. Right? What is the ant's godless? That the ant prepares its food so it will be able to benefit later. So we have a parallel in the story of Nebuchadnezzar. This is an interesting medrash on the medrash. That is, when Nebuchadnezzar was a secretary to Merodach Baladan, as we indicated, he was a commoner. So the medrash says the following. One day Nebuchadnezzar was sick, and a letter was dictated to a different secretary to be sent to Chizkiyahu HaMelech. And the letter read, to the city of Yerushalayim, shalom. I'm sorry, to the king Chizkiyahu, shalom. To the city of Yerushalayim, shalom. And to the great and mighty God, shalom. Nebuchadnezzar saw the letter that was about to go out. And Nebuchadnezzar said, You call Hashem the great and mighty God, and you put him last? So Nebuchadnezzar got up from his sickbed. He rewrote the letter to put Hashem's reference first. So it's brought down in Chazal that because he gave kavod to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by insisting HaKadosh Baruch Hu be mentioned first, he was zeicher to be ole l'gedula. It's actually similar to other midrashim that talk about like the one single thing. Eglon Melech Moab was the father of Rus. Now Eglon Melech Moab was an Oved Avodah Zarah, but when Ehud ben Gera, one of the judges, came to him and told him, I have a message from Hashem. Ehud actually killed him, if you remember. He actually stuck a knife in him. But Eglon stood up in honor of the message of Hashem. He stood up and he got killed at that very moment. But it says, because of the three steps he took in honor of the Shechina, he was Zeichet to Rus, which was the granddaughter of, I'm sorry, the great-grandmother of David HaMelech and Moshiach. So you see many midrashim and many figures. Sefer Shoftim. Sefer Shoftim, the book of Shoftim. So you see this idea that these really bad Rishayim, they do one little thing, and it pays off so tremendously for them. And therefore the Medrash says, that's why Nebuchadnezzar is like the ant that stores up something and gets the benefit in the future. By his sanctification of Hashem's name, he was Zoche to Malchus. So that's why Nebuchadnezzar is like the ant. The Shpanim, the rabbits or the hares, are not very powerful. This is considered to be Madayu Paras. That's Paras. And what is the meaning? They made their home in the rock. This refers to the great merit they have that they built the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash is called the rock of the world because it keeps the world alive. It brings the chuyas to the world. It brings divine blessing to the world. So they were smart. Even though spiritually they had very little zechuyas, but they have the zechus of building the Beis HaMikdash, which is a rock and a foundation for the world. And we know, of course, that the Beis HaMikdash is built, or in the middle of the Mikdash, of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, is the Evan Shesia, the foundation rock, which is the place where Hashem made Adam HaRishon, etc. That's where the Aron HaKodesh stood in the first Beis HaMikdash.
Is that the same location
as the Mizbeach? No, it's not the Mizbeach. The Evan Shesia is the Kodesh HaKadosh and the Holy of Holies, not the place of the altar. The altar is outside of the Holy of Holies. Now, the Arabs say the Dome of the Rock. The Dome of the Rock is said to be built over the Evan Shesia. We're not entirely sure. There's many machloksim. There are many different opinions where the Kodesh HaKadosh exactly was, but almost all of those opinions say it's not where the Dome of the Rock is, so it's not there. Obviously, it's around there, obviously, because the Harabayas, but they say that if you go down, go down to the coastal tours, they take you the closest that you can get to the Kodesh HaKadosh. But you see the reference, they made their home in the rock because they had the zechus of building the base HaMikdash. So it's interesting that this pair is not talking about how evil the nations are. It's actually talking about what were their zechuyos that gave them Ibracha. Persia. Now, where's Yav? One second. Where's Greece? Are we skipping Greece? One second. We have the ant. We have the hare. The Arabi, yeah, Loki, yeah, for some reason, we have no, Rashi tells us the spider is Esav, and there's a remez that it's Esav because it talks about Yadayim, you can grab it with your hands, and we know that Yadayim is Esav, right? That when Yaakov said the voice, Yitzchak said the voice is the voice of Yaakov, the hands are the hands of Esav. Now Rashi leaves us in the dark here. Obviously, Arba would have to be Yavan. locust would have to be a yavan locust. That's the one that, but he doesn't say any comment why locust would be a yavan. Yeah.
When Arba comes to Mitzrayim, it says like it blackened the land.
So that's very good. So that would fit with Choshech. Remember the drasha in Chumash Bereishis, the Golos of Yavan is called Choshech because it darkened our eyes from seeing the light of the Torah. So that's actually very good. I don't know why Rashi didn't say it. I mean, but it makes sense to say that the hordes of locusts do create darkness in the land. By the way, I don't know if you ever went through this. I remember in Yeshiva. You know, we have the cicadas, which are a form of locust. And they come out in mass, very large numbers, every 17 years. They're the 17-year locusts.
Are they all in the same cycle?
Yeah, basically, yeah, because they don't come out every year. I mean, So I don't know. It seems that they're not as massive as they used to be. When I was in Yeshiva, they really were. This was like in 1970 or 71. Really, really were all over the place. Like it was really like covering in Baltimore. So they still come out. These hordes do still come out occasionally. But they didn't darken the sky. They weren't that much. But you're right. What you're saying might very well fit. But again, the problem basically is that it's still hard to fit all these psukim because on one hand, the ant is praised for its merit, Nebuchadnezzar, and the rabbit is praised because it built the Beis HaMikdash. Now the arba is yavam. Now are they being praised here or are we just saying they darken the sky? Meaning are we praising their unity? That would be a little mudman to praise the unity of the yavam in. Try to take us away from the Torah. And similarly, the spider. Now, the spider is Yadayim, that's Esav, and it's Behecha Le'Melech. Again, I'm not sure if that's a praise or not, so, you know, it's hard for us to know. Meaning, the Midrashim don't always give us a key. This is a problem in Midrash, generally. Some of it is we just don't understand, and that is Chazal will often start you off, but they will not explicitly finish you off, meaning to say, they'll tell you something, but they will not tell you what every word in the pasuk means as a result of the medrash. Sometimes they just leave it to you to figure out, or sometimes through what they said, they're giving you hints. But that's bichlal a problem. In fact, it's also even in the Graz page, which is much later, the Graz and Achra. Sometimes the Graz, very often, in fact, not just sometimes, very, very often, the Bir Hagra will not take you through the whole continuity of the sentence. So, you know, we don't know. But let's just do one more, because this is the end of it. I just want to finish the list. And then we have, again, an animal image, confident striding, Laish. A Laish is a lion. A Laish is the mightiest of the beasts. He does not turn back in front of anybody. Again, Rashi says that's the Nebuchadnezzar. And here that's very, very clear, because the Nebuchadnezzar is explicitly described in Nevi'im as a lion coming from Babel. That is exactly, I mean, he is specifically given that designation. Now, Zarzir Masnayim is an interesting interesting expression. Many say Zarzir Masnayim is a greyhound. Greyhounds, right? A greyhound is a very thin dog and very long legs. And a greyhound, as you know, can run very fast, and that is said to be paras. Interesting, that might be a remez. You know, do you know that, have you ever, you know the saying of the post office, the U.S. post office, postal service, neither wind nor storm nor gloom of night shall stop us from doing our appointed rounds, you know, we'll deliver the mail no matter what. That actually comes from Herodotus. Herodotus was a famous ancient Greek historian. In fact, he's called the father of history. Like he wrote histories of ancient civilizations. And he wrote this passage about Persia. The post office was invented by Persia. In fact, the term doar for post office, or mail, is from the Gemara. Doar is from the Gemara. But in the Gemara itself, it's a Persian word that Chazal appropriated. So doar is an ancient Persian word. So maybe the remez of calling the Persian Empire the greyhounds might refer to the fact that they did develop a very fast postal service. I don't know if that would be the point to be Meshabech so much. But they're called the Zazir Mosnayim. And a Tayish is Greece. A Tayish is a ram. A ram is a male sheep. It's very, very stubborn. It pushes. And again, this is really borrowed from the book of Daniel, where Yavin is called a Tayish. All right, so the three powerful animals here are the lion, the greyhound, the ram, and the fourth is the melech that no one can stand against, and that refers to Esau, because Esau was more powerful than all those people. Okay, so the kids, it's something to think about. I just wanted to share with you the long medrash that Rashi brings, that we have five different descriptions of the four malchios based on Am Yisrael violating the Chamishei Chumshei Sorah. But what's interesting is you have to work it out because it's not a complete picture here. Sometimes we're emphasizing the evil of the malchios, and sometimes we're emphasizing the dechuyos of the malchios in terms of what gave them their koach over the world, what were their merits. Sometimes we seem to be mixing and matching, in which some of the kingdoms are described in terms of their merits, and some are described in terms of their power, or in terms of their evil. Meaning, it's hard to say, you have to sit down, maybe I'll think about it some more, and you can think about it some more. It's hard to say that what each distinct class is, meaning to say, I can't label, well, this is their zechuyos, this are their averos, because there's a kind of a mixing and a matching of the different images. Yeah.
You said spider is goes to
Edom. No, Asaph, yeah, Asaph.
The reason it might be is because that the way spider works is he makes a net,
yeah,
right? And then he makes a web, and then he hides.
Yeah.
And the fly or a butterfly or anything, it doesn't see the spider, so it feels this harmless area. It gets trapped, and once it's trapped,
yeah,
the spider comes out. And by the time butterfly knows what's going on, it's already too late that it's going to get eaten.
Mm-hmm.
The way Amalek works is that first the times of good Amalek are very friendly.
Right.
It's like the web is made. But when you find out that it's dangerous, it's usually when it's too late.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In World War II, first before that it was very the Germans were very friendly, and and it's like they were setting up like a net in a way. But the head of the spider, it was hidden. And later on, when the people were assimilated, they would never consider to be on the lookout for such an enemy. Is that when a person is so off guard, is that at that point the spider comes out, and at that point, you can't do anything because you're already stuck.
Okay.
Part of the system.
Okay. I hear. That makes sense. We get enticed into things. That's the old story about, they say, how do you cook a lobster? Lobster's not kosher, but how do you cook a frog? Also not kosher, but they say the concept is, because the problem is because the frog can jump, right? Mm-hmm. So if I put a live frog in hot water, it's going to jump out. So it says you gradually increase the water like by half a degree at a time. So put it in room temperature, half a degree, gets accustomed, and then eventually it boils to death. There is a concept of averus that way as well. You get used to a little, then one day you look at yourself and totally. And now you're talking about physical danger, but it's also true in spiritual danger. In ruchnius, we let things slide a little bit at a time. And a little bit at a time isn't so bad, it seems. Not so bad. But the little bits add up, and then a person finds himself very, very rachuk from where they should be. Now, I'll just begin. I don't want to go over the grud tonight because it would take too long. It's already late. But essentially, the grud does not go with any of this at all. And the grud basically says that all of these different groupings are describing Jews, how they behave, how they connect to Torah, how they disconnect to Torah, and it's discussing things that Hashem loves. Some of these mamarim are things that Hashem loves. So the things that look positive, like the ant and the badger, and the arba, the locust, and the spider, are positive. So we're going to see, as we look at the Gra, that some of these inyanim are things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves, and some of these inyanim are things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hates. Some of the things we should avoid, some of the things we should embrace, right? So he'll have a whole different mahalach. He's not going to connect any of this to the four malchias. Okay? Let me just show you one thing, though. At the end of this, I just want to read you just the final psukim, just to give you a Augur's final words, because this is the only parak that Augur has in Mishle. And the last two psukim are very significant, just pasuk lamed beis. Im navalta, this is an important musr for us. Im navalta, if you have become disgusting, that means if you have been humiliated, if you have been debased, if you seem to have lost your status in the world, behisna say, it is because you try to elevate yourself. It comes from arrogance and gaiva. Hashem is described as a mashpil geyim. He lowers those who try to be arrogant and prideful. So im navalta, if you hear yourself despised by others, be hisna say, it is because you have tried to raise yourself with gaiva. Im zamaisa. Now what does zamaisa mean? So everybody knows, who's on Gemara, you know the term edim zomamim, right? So edim zomamim means witnesses who have conspired. Good, we have technical definitions of azama, but the word zamama is a conspiracy or a plan, a thought out course of action. Im zamaisa means if as a result of your embarrassment you plan to lash out, meaning I'm going to show those people not to talk to me that way, my advice to you, gentlemen, is yad lepeh, put your hand on your mouth. Shut up. Don't do it. Don't strike out. Why? So he ends with a colorful mashal. Mitz chalav. Now mitz in the modern Hebrew is juice. But literally it means to squeeze, because obviously you get juice by squeezing a fruit. The squeezing of milk produces butter. Right? Squeezing of milk meaning churning of milk. If I take milk and I pound it. Actually, this is an interesting question. Some say chema in biblical Hebrew is cream, not milk, and not butter. Well, whatever, but be it as it may, when you agitate milk, when you pound milk, you get butter. Mitzaf, if you squeeze your nose too hard, you get blood. Meaning, right, if you want to squeeze, so mitzafayim. If you want to squeeze out your anger, now squeezing out your anger meaning I want to express my anger. People often say, I'm upset. The best way for me to deal with it is to get it out. So I squeeze my anger out to express it. What do you get, right? When you squeeze milk, you get butter. When you squeeze your nose, you get blood. When you squeeze out your anger, yotzi riv, all you will get is machlokas. You're not going to get an apology by screaming and yelling. You're not going to get admiration by screaming and yelling. You're not going to get a restoration of your status by screaming and yelling. But letting your anger out is only going to get you more machlokas. And that is why, im zamosa, if you're planning on restoring your reputation, yad lepeh, put your hand on your mouth. Meaning, again, it's a vivid metaphor, because sometimes you literally may have to put your hand on me, meaning you can't control yourself, meaning the words are going to come out no matter what. You can't mentally control yourself, so physically control yourself. No, just put your hand there, so you literally cannot articulate the words. Right, so though that is Augur's final advice to us. Again, it's not, at least according to Rashi, it doesn't seem to be very much connected to anything that came before, but we'll see, according to the Gra, there's a little bit more of a connection, but we'll see it next week.
Okay. The fact is, people that run for president win. So how's that fit in the Baal of this Nazi?
Well, you know, the truth of the matter is that many presidents are profoundly humiliated. Yeah, they win, but you know, whether it's Nixon, whether it's Clinton, even Obama, presidents often suffer a lot of humiliation. Their private life gets exposed, and corruptions and all sorts of things. But also, it doesn't say automatic. See, it doesn't quite say every person that's a Balgaiva will be lowered. Maybe in this world it doesn't always happen. But it says, but if you're lowered, it's because of your Gaiva. See, that's not, it's not the same thing as saying every Balgaiva will be lowered, because the Rebbeinu Shlomo has different cheshbonos. But if what happens to a person is his status in the world is lowered, it will be because of his Gaiva. Right? So that might be a terrorist too. Okay, have a good week, everybody. And, I'll see you next week.
Is there such thing as, I know Gaul's ending was supposed to be recapitulate all three.
Yeah, that's what the Maral says.
Is there such thing as Edom, Shiva Edom?
Yes. We say Gaulus Bavel is slavery and persecution. Gaulus Paras is genocide, killing of the nation. Gaulus Yavan is spiritual assimilation. And all of that is, so that's why in Edom you can have the Bavel of Edom, and the Paras of Edom, and the Yavan of Edom. Is there a distinction? I want to take it back. According to the Maral, Edom does not have a distinct identity. Edom is an intensification of the other three Goliaths. So in Edom, you will either have persecution, genocide, or assimilation. It's much. Edom is not a distinct category in that way. It just takes everything that existed and makes it worse.